Our reading is taken from 2 Samuel chapter 11. In the spring of the year, the time when kings go out to battle, David sent Joab with his officers and all Israel with him. They ravaged the Ammonites and besieged Rabbah, but David remained at Jerusalem. Now it happened late one afternoon when David rose from his couch and was walking about on the roof of the king's palace, that he saw from the roof a woman bathing. The woman was very beautiful. David sent someone to inquire about her. It was reported, "This is Bathsheba, daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite." And so David sent messengers to get her, and she came to him, and he lay with her. Now she was purifying herself after her period. Then she returned to her house. The woman conceived, and she sent and told David, "I am pregnant." And so David sent word to Joab, "Send me Uriah the Hittite." And Joab sent Uriah to David. And when Uriah came to him, David asked how Joab and the people fared, and how the war was going. Then David said to Uriah, "Go down to your house and wash your feet." Uriah went out of the king's house, and there followed him a present from the king. But Uriah slept at the entrance of the king's house with all the servants of his lord, and he did not go down to his own house. When they told David Uriah did not go down to his house, David said to Uriah, "You have just come from a journey. Why did you not go down to your house?" And Uriah said to David, "The ark and Israel and Judah remain in booths, and my lord Joab and the servants of my lord are camping in the open field. Shall I then go down to my house to eat and to drink and to lie with my wife? As you live and as your soul lives, I will not do such a thing." Then David said to Uriah, "Remain here today also, and tomorrow I will send you back." And so Uriah remained in Jerusalem that day, and on the next day, David invited him to eat and drink in his presence and made him drunk. And in the evening, he went out to lie on his couch with his servants of his lord, but he did not go down to his house. Now in the morning, David wrote a letter to Joab and sent it by hand to Uriah. In the letter he wrote, "Set Uriah in the forefront of the hardest fighting and then draw back from him so that he may be struck down and die." As Joab was besieging the city, he assigned Uriah to the place where he knew there were valiant warriors. The men of the city came out and fought with Joab, and some of the servants of David among the people fell. Uriah the Hittite was killed as well. Then Joab sent and told David all the news about the fighting, and he instructed the messenger, "When you have finished telling the king all the news about the fighting, then if the king's anger rises, and if he says to you, 'Why did you go so near the city to fight? Did you not know that they would shoot from the wall? Who killed Abimelech, son of Jerubbaal? Did not a woman throw an upper millstone on him from the wall so that he died? Why did you go so near the wall?' And then you shall say, 'Your servant Uriah the Hittite is dead too.'" And so the messenger went and came and told David all that Joab had sent him to tell. The messenger said to David, "The men gained an advantage over us and came out against us in the field, but we drove them back to the entrance of the gate. And then the archers shot at your servants from the wall. Some of the king's servants are dead, and your servant Uriah the Hittite is dead also." David said to the messenger, "Thus you shall say to Joab, 'Do not let this matter trouble you, for the sword devours now one and now another. Press your attack on the city and overthrow and encourage him. Now, when the wife of Uriah heard that her husband was dead, she made lamentation for him. But when the mourning was over, David sent and brought her to his house, and she became his wife and bore him a son. The word of the Lord. Yesterday, Louise and I witnessed something that we've been waiting 3 years to see. Because we have this couple of cardinals who nest outside our kitchen window every year and give birth. In the last 2 years, we have missed their taking off. They're usually gone somewhere. They leave without saying goodbye or anything. But this year, we happened to watch from the time they were born until the time they were flying the nest. And it was a very dramatic thing because the first one, there were two little guys, and the first one got up at the edge of the nest and was flapping his wings and stuff, and he was gone in no time. He disappeared, hopefully with the mom and dad. But the mother and father kept coming back for a whole day, coming back to the nest for this other one. And he looked kind of puny, and he didn't have any fluff. He was kind of like, he looked awful, actually. And we were rooting for him. And then there was a whole period of time when we didn't see the parents at all. He was just there by himself. He climbed out of the nest, ended up sitting on a branch for a while, then ended up back in the nest. And then we didn't see any action, so we thought, well, maybe he must have gone. But somewhere mid-afternoon, we were in the den, and this flash went by the window. And so we were waiting to see what was going to happen. Well, certainly it was the father who came along. The father came along, got to the nest, gave him something to eat. Then the mother came. And then they started to encourage him to move. And we happened to be watching right at the time when he finally made a leap. And he jumped off his branch and flew all the way to the other side of the deck and landed in our cactus plant. And he kind of fluttered around there for a little bit, and the parents are running around like crazy. And he jumped off again and landed on the ground outside the deck. And so we're figuring, if somebody doesn't do something soon, this poor thing is not going to make it. He eventually worked his way out about 3 feet from the deck. And he was trying to fly, and at this point, as God is my witness, the mother and father going back and forth, jumping to the tree and back, being back, kind of showing him what to do. And all of a sudden, from the empty woods come about 7 different birds. And they joined in with this parade, going back and forth. There were sparrows, and there was a titmouse, and all different kinds of birds. They were all there. And they were all running back and forth from the kid to the tree, to the kid to the tree. And finally, the kid went up to the tree. And then we had a huge rainstorm. We thought they got to be all huddled around this little thing trying to protect it from the rain. And that reminded me, after thinking all week about David and Bathsheba, that isn't that really the way we would like it to be? In our own culture, in our own lives, that has happened. We've trusted each other enough to have our children be reared by one another, taught by one another, modeling Christianity and adulthood by one another, by being family, by being friends, and that's what we should be doing. And I thought, what a contrast to what is happening in so many ways. And I woke up this morning in a jolt, and I said, I got all this preparation here. I got pages of stuff. I got notes I've written. I've been working on this all week. And I woke up with a start this morning saying, I can't do this, because this is almost the exact same story that's going on the news right now. And that's kind of hard. But I have no intention of getting into politics or anything else, but just to be able to say this. some of the worst tragedies in the history of the world came because there was disagreement with ideology. We had one way, they had another way. And depending how polarized those two groups of people are, they usually end up, whether you're going back into the pre-civilization period right on to today, they usually end up in some kind of a war. And the goal of that war is to annihilate each other. The purpose is to eliminate the enemy. We saw that lived in our own lifetime in the Second World War. If you were around the First World War, it was the same politic. But certainly the Second World War was illustrative that when you have something that is so dehumanizing that can create a group of people to be the monsters of the world, to eliminate them and then demonize another group and eliminate them and another group and eliminate them, and the world sitting back doing nothing, someone has to say something. And so we had a war. And that war ended up with annihilation on both sides. When you have disagreements of ideologies, but there's something to be lost if we destroy the other person, then the war is mitigated somewhat. And we try not to destroy everything, but just the parts that we want to get rid of. In those kind of, I'm going to call reasonable wars, certainly there's collateral damage and people being hurt and killed unnecessarily. But the outcome always seems to be, if you happen to be on the right side, that the benefit outweighs the deaths that take place. That's why it's called collateral damage. We saw that in a number of wars in our time, and certainly the beginning of the Iraq War, it was about oil. And we saw how that whole thing ended. But ultimately, when you step away from culture and the history of the world, when you have people of reason or people who are human, reason, there's the possibility of compromise. There's the possibility of hope, of change, and of something productive coming out rather than destructive. And that's how most of our things, whether we're talking about our relationships with our family, relationships with our neighbors, relationships in the state, all of our societal relationships, all the way on to the great politic that unites us or distances us from other nations. Reason as a way of making things work for the betterment of humanity. Because the crux of humanity is the ability to reason. Now, what has happened in our time, and I use this illustration this week with a purpose, we have become more and more secondary in terms of our control of life in so many ways on artificial intelligence. I call it artificial intelligence, that's what they call it, but basically it's supposed to be a mirror of human intelligence and reason. So that when you put something before that reasonable thing, you're going to come up with a reasonable result. The challenge is, how do we use and integrate that artificial intelligence into our own culture? Well, the way it's being manipulated, and I use the word with reason, the way artificial intelligence is being manipulated, we are coming to a place where artificial intelligence is telling us what the truth is. And the debate about what the truth is getting lost in the confusion about the differences that are being exploited out there. To wit, there are situations that are going on presently in the world that really are to benefit one group of people. But in order to do that, they have to dehumanize the people that they are greeting too. For example, I give you some of the things that have taken place recently in our lifetime. Now, we know that we go back to the Civil War. And prior to the Civil War, what brought about the Civil War, before it got entangled with politics, was the issue of slavery. Slavery was accepted by Christians and Jews and all the people who lived on this continent because the word had gone forth that these were not people, that these were some kind of animal, these black things that came out of Africa were not human. They were subhuman. They just looked like they were human, but they were not human. And when you say it often enough and you build a culture around that, that is so important in the growth of an economy that the states were looking for. We, unfortunately, have grown up with the same attitudes that have founded our place in the world today. The sad thing is, you and I, when asked, would never, ever, ever say we look at a black person with some kind of judgment or some kind of a feeling that they are not really up to par, that they really don't belong. But I dare say that if we pick out an individual black person and place him before us, depending on how he was dressed or how she looked or what her attitude happened to be or how she was dressed or the way she spoke or the mannerisms of her life or the fact that she was a drug addict or a prostitute or the fact that he'd been in jail a few times, our judgment might not be quite so understanding. And that's not because there's something wrong with us. That's because we stand on the shoulders of a culture that at one time truly believed that these people were not people, they were subhuman. And with all the advances that have been made, we may not see it so ugly here in our area, but in parts of this country, these people are still being treated like slaves, like they're subhuman. And it's not just the alt-right. It's not just the Nazi proponents. There's a deep-seated hatred for people who have never had a chance to be seen as people. No different than when we go over to Africa and we read a story about a group of warlords over there running into towns and gathering up all the young women and sending off to be prostitutes. You heard of Boko Haram? Thousands of young women are snatched from their homes and sold into slavery. 2018. There are still 800 who have never been found from the last 4 years. We find that horrible. Do we have the same sense of horror when it comes to seeing something happen to a black person somewhere in our country? Particularly, I'm not talking about criminals, I'm talking about persons who live decent lives who end up on the short end of a stick because somebody makes a judgment about them and may maim them, hurt them, kill them. I'm talking about many black people in this country, as well as white people in poverty areas who share the same neighborhoods, who don't have a possibility, not a chance, of ever getting an education enough to get a job. I'm talking about the people who don't have an ounce of hope that they will ever be able to get out of the ghetto that they happen to be born into because they've been there for three generations and there's no way out. These are the people who are demonized. There are many more groups who are demonized. In our present day, if you happen to be a Muslim, maybe not so much here, because you're not as available, I guess, or visible. But in areas and cities where there are large populations of Muslim people who are being persecuted for the fact that they are Muslims. Not that anybody understands Muslim, not that anybody's taking time to meet these people, but before they even start, they're at a deficit. Haven't you gone into a convenience store of late or stopped by to get some gas at one of those little stores and come face to face with a Muslim who happened to be from Pakistan? Do you ever think that that person sitting behind the counter looks at you and wonders what you're thinking? Because it is so real for them. It is not for us because we are right now in the majority, but in the very near future, we're going to be a minority. These are hurtful things. And there's pages and pages and pages of information. There's tons of stuff you can say about it. But I think the bottom line is what you have here in this morning's gospel, or in our gospel reading, is a man of power who took advantage of his power and put a woman in the role of victim for whatever his reason. But being a powerful man, forced her to have sex with him, impregnates her, and in order to cover his tracks, because the husband hadn't been home for a while, how could she be pregnant, sends him off to be killed to cover his sins. And then when all is said and done and he repents, he calls her in and takes her on as a wife, and they have a son. We can dehumanize people from a place of power. Brothers and sisters, I know I struggle. I struggle a lot with my own feelings and my own sense of self and my own need to talk about community and how community is built and how everybody belongs and all the wonderful goals that we set for ourselves. It is difficult. But brothers and sisters, it is a time in our lives where we have got to begin to speak and to do things that are going to somehow underscore the fact that there are people out here who really do see something real, who understand a bigger truth, that everyone belongs in the same moral category as everybody else. That if indeed we believe in God, and hopefully we do, whatever God is, somebody said maybe you should pass out paper on Sunday and everybody draw their image of God and see what you come up with. We might try that. But if we believe in God, that there is a God, or that Jesus revealed something about God that said, we are a people who are part of creation, every facet of creation screams the presence of God. Driving down here this morning, coming back by the DOT thing there, that where you store all the trucks and stuff, I caught a glimpse of the road and the trees and everything else, and on the side there were some weeds, and I thought, you know, right there in the hay field, but in the weeds along the road, God is to be found because we're all part of that one piece of God. God is the life. If you start there, then nothing should ever, ever take us away from that. And in our world, it is so easy to become lax or to even kind of dream a little bit that perhaps, well, this one's an exception. Well, I know you're talking about, but, you know, over here, and that's how we got where we are. During the Second World War in a concentration camp, and I have this on my desk, a priest wrote, when they came for the Jews, I said nothing. And when they came for the Presbyterians, I said nothing. When they came for other Christians and gays, I said nothing. When they came for the immigrants, I said nothing. And when they came for me, There was nobody to say anything. There's a huge, explosive silence that I think makes what's happening in the world so much more evil. Brothers and sisters, I pray that the peace of God would give us an outrage, not that we would lash out, but that we would find strength to truly be and express and somehow aid, that the message is, we are all one people. We are all on this planet together. And our job is simply learning to accept, to get along, to compromise, to be compassionate, and if anything else, dare to love somehow, that the world would change. Anyway, it's just a thought.